Hari
Page 63, Vritti, Part 3. The Chatushloki, Srimad Bhagavatam, in a transcendent yet down-to-earth nutshell. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura classifies the four seed verses of Srimad Bhagavatam as Achintya Beda Beda Lakshanam. By this, the Thakura means that the Chatushloki exhibits qualities, Lakshanam, that so much surpass Chintya, human thoughts and arguments, we are obliged to approach them as inconceivable. And so he's bringing out that these Chatushloki are so far beyond what people think, how they think, what they are able to think about, that then we would have to approach them from this point that they're inconceivable. If that's there, then by the Lord's mercy one can understand that. Does that make sense? Because people, who thinks about God as Brahman, Paramahama, and Bhagavan? Right? Yes. Otherwise, who else does that? Right? That's it. And then, all these are together. We're comfortable dealing with any aspect. Right? Then it's about, and then it's the devotional service. The service is the prominent. Because most people is that, no, the goal of religion, you know, my situation in heaven, what benefits I'll get, this is all the prominent. Right? Does that make sense? So it'll all be goal-oriented, nice, but that goal orientation is always about ourselves. So here we're dealing with goal orientation that's not about ourselves, but about Krishna, about someone else. It's about pleasing God rather than pleasing ourselves. People want to make God happy because, you know, they're not really enthusiastic about thunderbolts or earthquakes, right? You know, like that. You know, you don't have to worry about waking up and being a frog or that. You know, that's the Wicked Witch of the West. But they don't want to be involved in something that's going to turn out bad for themselves. So this idea of that full surrender, that everything's for the Lord, that He is a person that's beyond all these other aspects. That's different. Yes, He is God. He is the Supreme Controller. He is everything. But at the same time, He's a person. And it's about the personal relationship. So that's quite unique. Yes? So it's beyond what people will think. But it's not that people won't appreciate it. We see it so complete, so consistent, that it's explained nicely, people will appreciate it. Take a moment, if you will, to reflect upon this with care. We are here as a classroom of students, most of us steeped in Western rationalism and pragmatist conceptions of quote-unquote education. But words like achintya, inconceivable, keep popping in to stare us in the face. Right? Because we want something right there, we can just grasp it, bite our teeth into it, right? Like that. The rationalist pragmatist response to this is often to raise the question of what gain can we as students hope to secure for ourselves by studying four verses that are, by dictionary definition, impossible, incredible, and preposterous? Never mind, Mr. Webster. The word gain is an auspicious place to look for an answer. Think of that word as we know it from Srila Prabhupada's usage of Sanskrit, artha. How many times we have read and heard it? Now, artha has a negator form that you may be even more familiar with. Anartha means really, you know, bad game. In Canto 1, Chapter 7, we studied an oft-cited verse, the first line of which seems to be the antithesis of gain. Arto pasamam sakshat. We learn here that all pollutants of consciousness, things that are actually unwanted, anarta, by the pure soul, stand between the eternal servant of Krishna and the heart and Abhideya. Because you have the soul and you want to get the process of serving God. But all these anarthas, in other words, what we've gained in life, is standing in the way. Now, this is the interesting thing. Please say how Maharaj thinks. It's very interesting. Is that all the things that get in the way of our Krishna consciousness is all the things that we've worked hard for life after lifetime to gain. Right? Everything that we consider important in this world is what's standing in the way between us and pure devotional service. Because it on its own is an obstacle. It connected to Krishna is not. So it's nice, it's simple, direct, straightforward, but what the difficulty comes up is, why do we want them? Right? I mean, it's the standard, you know, land, house, family, wealth, position, you know, health, long life, beauty, fame, you know, all these things. Why do we want them?
To be happy.
To be happy. And who's being happy here?
No,
that's another thing. We're just talking, you know, directed. What's the intent of who's going to be happy by this?
Me.
Yes. That's the thing. It's ourselves. So now you're going to. So what's the difficulty now? Now here's how it works. The general method is: if it's for me, I'm going to work hard. If it's not for me, you know, whether am I going to work hard? No. Okay. We may have the indirect me. I'm working hard for family. It's not for me, right? But it's my family or my country or my. You understand? And if it's not important for me, we don't work. Right? So, and that's the other side of the materialism, right? One side's karma, the other side is jnana. Right? If I think it's for me, in my illusion, I work hard. When I figure out this is useless, I'm not going to work. So the karmis work hard, the jnanis don't do any work. So these are our two options that we've been using since time immemorial. Now here comes along a process that says, yes, you're going to work hard like a karmi without the attachment of the jnani. That just doesn't compute. Right? We've never done that before. We'll work hard if it's for us. We won't work hard if it's not for us. Here it's not for us, we're going to work hard. Yes?
It is for us in the long term. If Krishna is happy.
Yes, we're happy. We're happy. But it's still our happiness depends on someone else's happiness. Okay. Then let's take it. But now, in the material world, so we make someone else happy, we become happy. Okay? Who's in control of making the other person happy?
Yes.
Yes. But now, in the devotional sense, who's in control? Krishna or the other senior Vaishnavas, right? We're only an instrument in assisting them. You understand? So, and the focus is not actually on the dative, it's on the relationship. Right? It's not on the results, it's on the actual interaction, right? The subject and the object meeting through activity or the verb. Right, and we're assisting in that. So the right mood, the right situation, the right time. Right, so all those things combined, that's what we're working to do. To see that that verb happens so that those two can interact. You know, so we're doing basically that here, but we're looking at it that I'm the one controlling it. You know what I'm saying? On one level, people will acknowledge, yes, I'm just assisting in this. You know, on a good day, you could probably, you know, anybody who is successful in certain ways, you know, whatever it may be, successful in family life and community, economically, politically, and they're stable, steady, and you could say somewhat satisfied or somewhat secure, then presenting the philosophy that we're only an instrument, there's a good chance that they would be able to appreciate it. Right? Because it is going on, and then they're able to relax and look at it that actually it's not me. Right? There's higher things at work, because everybody else is trying the same thing, it's not happening. Why is it happening for me? Right? So if the pride's not there, then we can deal. But if the pride's there or insecurity's there, then they'll really feel like they have to make it happen. Instead. So the material always looks like the spiritual, but when you dig a little deeper, then there's something that's not quite right. Does that make sense? But that's why we're trying to take the same model and use it. That's why we're saying, take all the house, this and that, use it in Krishna's service. So we can relate to that. But then there's always the difficulty is that how much we say, yes, use the house. So what does that mean? What's the house? It's Krishna's energy. Okay, let's start. Okay, how do you... Okay, now in front of the front door, even though technically in apartments it's kind of like public property, right? How do you keep the shoes and keep the stuff? And
hardly.
But some don't because it's not theirs. Means if you walked around, just did a tour of all the apartment buildings, walked up the stairs, looked in front of the doors, you know, or underneath, you know, that little bit where it's how you say, it's too tall to just be under the house just holding it up, but too short to actually stand up and do anything, right? Then what does that look like? So in other words, if it's public, how does it look?
Nice.
But it's Krishna's. Then, okay, how's the front door? You know? Like that. Is it clean? Like that. Or what's behind the door? Where do they keep the keys? The Krishna's keys. You know, every time you're going out of the house, you know, okay, who's got the keys? Where are the keys? Everyone starts looking for the keys. But they're Krishna's keys. Right? You know? Then what about the rug? You know, you walk in, there's the rug there. Is that kept nicely? Is it in the right place? Is it clean? Why is it in the place it's in? You know what I'm saying? We can go like this around the whole house. When we talk house, we mean all these details. So, of course, how much detail someone sees is all that's required to engage. Does that make sense? So, how much you can perceive is all you have to engage. But as you become purified, you see more. But the point is not just to say, yes, my house is for Krishna. How is it for Krishna? Let's walk over. Okay, here on the, you know, the southern side, there's a window. How is that window for Krishna? How are you using it for Krishna? You know, is it latched? Look out the window. If we open the window, is that little thing that you put in there to make sure it doesn't blow closed? If a storm comes, is it okay? Or did it fall out like a year and a half ago? You know, and one of them you know where it is, but the other one you're not really sure. You understand? So if it's Krishna's, why haven't we fixed it? You understand? So therefore, we take care of Krishna's stuff at our own standard as if it's ours. So that's not instrument. That's a sense of ownership. So therefore, there's weakness. It bothers us. We will get disturbed. The material energy will harass you through these things. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Alright, so everybody wants artha.
Yes.
So how artha turns into anartha? Is it by consciousness or...?
But more by lack of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that when there's lack of consciousness, then we don't really see it. Means, in other words, we're conscious, but here when we say lack of consciousness, we always mean lack of Krishna consciousness. So it's basically that. Because if it's connected to Krishna, it's all Krishna's energies anyway. It's not ours anyway. It may be our quota, but the point is if it's all Krishna's, we take care of it. You know, it's just like Prabhupada's walking down the street with the devotees. I'm just thinking this won't make much sense to most people. You had this phenomena where you have the street, right, where the cars go. And then on that means the street's wide enough the cars can go and you can park. Right? So there can be one line of car on each side, plus you can drive. right? Then there's a bit of grass, right? Then there's the sidewalk. Then there's a bigger piece of grass. Then there's the house, right? You may have seen this in the movies, right? Yeah. But so it's just, I mean, a lot of the older places in America, that was standard. That's how a house was. And between one house and the next, there was quite a bit, and then you had a fence in between. You know, so there, it was quite, you know, quite big. And then generally there's trees, you know, whatever. So there, Prabhupada's walking with devotees, and at one of the houses, and also outside, you always have a tap in the front and one in the back for watering the lawn and, you know, doing things, washing the car, all those kinds of stuff. So he saw one tap was dripping. So he walked over and closed it. So was it his tap? No. Was it his quota of tap?
No.
But how is he seeing it? It's Krishna's energy. Therefore, Krishna's energy is never wasted, no matter where we are. Does that make sense? Because, as Krishna pointed out, he is the paraphernalia. Right? We're taking, okay, Krishna's the person, but he's not. He's also the paraphernalia. Or we take him as the paraphernalia and forget about him as the person. So this is the achintya part, is that he's both. He's the person that you want to offer everything to, and he's the paraphernalia that you're offering to him. And he's the ability and, you know, to offer it. So he is the Sambandha, he is the Abhideya, he is the Prayojana.
So what's achintya about it?
What's so achintya about it? What do you say?
Or we just get used to it.
I'm just saying, it's, yeah, 4 years of discussing this, and then it's become fairly straightforward. So that means, by Krishna's grace, one sees that that's standard, that's the way to see. But for most people, that's a difficulty. Because it's like we say, oh yeah, no, I can use anything in Krishna's service, so that means all the things that I'm attached to, I can remain attached to and keep all that, because I can say it's for Krishna. And as soon as I'm not attached to it, then I don't use it for Krishna. But the point is, it was good for Krishna, why aren't we still using it? Right? So then how do you define what I use for Krishna if I'm attached or not attached? What's the common point? How do I define? Okay, if I'm attached to something, I'll use it, even if I shouldn't be using it. And if I'm not attached to it, I won't use it, even though I should. So what defines how I use things? What I use? Duties. Yes. And your? Yes. So duties that are defined by Shastra, Guru Sadhu and Shastra. That's how you define, because in the beginning I'm attached, I don't want to use it in Krishna's service, I have to. As I advance more, I become detached, I don't want to use it because it's trouble, but you still have to. Yes.
It wasn't sure Prabhupada's duty to probably turn that cup off, tap off. He just saw it as Krishna's
energy
being wasted. But if we went around seeing Krishna's energy being wasted, we'd be never doing any pure devotional service. We'd be just caught up in, you know, there's so much energy wasted.
Yes, but why is it a problem that it's wasted?
Why?
Yes.
Unconscious.
Okay, it's unconscious, but I'm saying, what's the problem? Why is it a problem people are wasting things? Okay, they don't care. And then because they don't care, then who suffers? Okay, they have to pay more for it now. And later, then what? They won't have enough water, right? You have a dripping tap. If you had put a bucket under that dripping tap, how much water would be in that bucket at the end of the day? Right? And then you take that times 365. And then there's one in the back.
But the question I'm getting on is, how far do we go in?
No, but that's what I'm addressing. Because what we have to get to is, why are you approaching it like that? Because most will approach it from pranamoy. Prabhupada's approaching it from Anandamaya, that it's Krishna as a person.
Yes.
It's his energies. We don't want to waste his energies. Others are wasting it because it's not good. It's bad. Wasting energy is bad. You can take anyone that's a little bit enlightened, then they will immediately jump up and down. You know, you could start, you know, journalistic things about it. CNN would do, you know, how you say, 24-hour reports on it. You know, the whole thing would be about. You know, it means, you know what I'm saying? We could start a whole thing. You go to them and say, all these taps and work it out that it's dripping this much, it means this much volume in a day times, you know, however many houses and taps there are in America. And then that means this much water is being wasted. I guarantee it would become a big thing. They'd be on the 6 o'clock news. You know, all these ministers would be talking. They'd be flying an X-ray. It would be a whole thing happening. Why? Because it's pranamoy. So we have to be very, very careful. That's what we were discussing before, is why are the devotees worried about the cows? Because they're Krishna's cows? It's because it pleases Krishna? Or it's just, it's a good thing. It's a pious thing. What about the old people? What about the kids? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? What about the women? You know what I'm saying? It's coming from pranamoy. It's not coming from anandamoy. Why? Because where's the sense of duty? You know what I'm saying? It's one thing, you're walking by, you see a tap, you close it. It's not the Prabhupada's walking around the neighborhood looking for leaking taps. That's the difference. So that's the whole thing. Now it's become my identity that I'm the leaking tap closer. You know, and then, you know, when I'm giving Bhagavatam class, I talk about, you know, wasting Krishna's energy is leaking taps and this and that. And I start a whole thing with the temple council and, you know, you understand? So that's the whole point. It's not Prabhupada's identity. It's not it's just that we don't waste Krishna's energy. You see it, you stop it. You don't see it, you don't go looking for it. You already have a service. But now, how am I going to solve the problem? Because the real problem is not affecting me, it's affecting the person that's there. So why should they close their tap? Because they're wasting Krishna's water. How do you do that? By preaching. So therefore, if you really want to solve the leaking tap problem, you have to preach. Does that make sense? Yes. Working hard. Yes. Yes. But I mean, he's coming, but also the point is then after he comes, it would also be working hard. You know, the point is that if you always see Krishna and Prabhupada, you know, there, then why we won't be working? It's their thing. Yes, so that's a good point. That's the point. If you're Krishna conscious, then you see like that. His promise here in the Mayapur project, it's his instruction. Because it was the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because it was the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because it was mentioned by Nityananda Prabhu. Does that make sense? So if Nityananda Prabhu is mentioning it, surely Lord Chaitanya's desire. Yes, whatever it takes. But the point is one should be Krishna conscious. That's a technique you could use. You know what I'm saying? So it's good. If it inspires one, then that's good. But then you have to be able to keep it fresh by always connecting it. It can't just be a managerial technique. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise it'll get old. So it's good. One can do that. It's good. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if one can be inspired, and then you can inspire. Because the point is Krishna is here. He is performing his path. So he does see all these things. Okay. The word gain is an auspicious place to look for an answer. How many times have we read and heard it? Now, Artha is a great... Oh, yeah, we don't think that. Here we learn that all pollutants of consciousness, things that are actually unwanted, end quote, anartha, by the pure soul stand between the eternal servant of Krishna and the heart and Abhideya. Abhideya is the Vedic process of gaining Purushartha. Purushartha, Shiromani, Prema, Mahadhana. Lord Chaitanya taught in C.C. Madhya Lila 21:25, quote, this goal is the living entity's topmost interest and greatest wealth, end quote. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began this verse with the words, Abhideya Nama, Bhakti, Prema, Prayojana. This means devotional service or sense activity for the satisfaction of the Lord is called Abhideya because it can develop one's original love of Godhead, which is the goal of life. In the Anartopasanam verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 176, the term Bhakti Yoga Adhoksajay is used to denote the process Abhideya. This first canto first concludes Chakre Saravata Samhitam. Therefore, Srila Vyasadeva compiled this Saravata, Satvata Samhitam, Satvata Samhita. You may remember a statement by Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, cited in the first canto, chapter 18, study guide, in which he explains that the original title of Srimad Bhagavatam, prior to its recital by Sri Sukadev Goswami, was Paramahamsa Satvata Samhita. Right, because it was around a lot time before. It's mentioned it was, I think, first spoken by the personified Vedas. Right, in the Bhagavatam, in the Krishna book, then there's the prayers by the personified Vedas. I've heard it said that, I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, that's the original Bhagavatam. Right. The four shlokas are the essence of what is being explained, but that's the original Bhagavatam. And so from there, then it all expands. Just thinking is that the chapter shlokia, this chapter, and that chapter in Krishna book, these are two of the ones that basically no one likes to deal with.
Yeah. It's like a wonder, why is it there?
Yeah, and then everything else is just expanding from that. Yes. Basically, yes. Srila Prabhupada elaborated in a 1970 Bombay lecture. The Bhagavatam, it is derived from the word Bhagavat Shabda. Bhagavat Shabda means Bhagavan. And Bhagavata means those who are in connection with Bhagavata. Bhagavan. So the Srimad Bhagavatam means it is in connection with the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Devotee is called Bhagavata, and the book about Bhagavan is also Bhagavata. The logic and scriptural evidence, as divine grace marshals, is crystal clear. Note his explanation that the sambandha, transcendental connection, by which we may have a relationship with Srimad Bhagavatam, is obtained as soon as we accept the text of the Bhagavata as Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself, in his Shabda form. The Artopasanam, Shakshad verse, proves that Bhagavat Shabda purifies the heart of the fortunate soul who hears the Lord's glories exactly as the hearts of those fortunate enough to see and serve his personal incarnation 5,000 years ago were purified. Om Namo Bhagavate Dharma Yatma Vishodhanaya Nama Iti, as the son of Dharmaraj prays in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.2. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all religious principles, who cleanses the heart of the conditioned soul in this material world. So then what we see here is that he's seeing the Supreme Lord, then how religious principles come from him. Right? So that means now we're connecting religious principles and him. So what's in between religious principles and him? Devotional service, but I'm just saying in the levels of consciousness. Between religious principles, manamoy, and
vijnanamoy.
Okay? So the spiritual. In other words, in the spiritual understanding, you can see the connection between the Lord and the religious principles. Right? Then we said, then how do you deal from there with artha and kama? But engage them according to what? According to religious principles, which are connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? Right? Because in Hokusaja means how Krishna is descending into this world, how he makes everything happen here. Right? So he is at the same time, he's transcendental. Even though he's entered, he's still beyond as a person. But at the same time, he's entered, and he is what you see. So then that can be engaged in the Lord's service by making that connection. So how do I decide what it is I'm going to engage? Because there's a lot of stuff here to engage. You said before. Yes, you follow the duties as given by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That's how we know. Otherwise, there's so many things you could be doing. You could be walking around closing all the taps, you know, in Poughkeepsie or something. Is that make sense? But we're not, because that's not our duty. Someone else can close. In other words, these people can close their own taps, right? So we just teach them why they should close their own taps. Because the energy belongs to Krishna. Does this make sense? Yes.
Sometimes people ask us, why not doing, you know,
Social work.
And then
it says, so one thing you do is, so give us some money, we'll do it. You know, talk's cheap. They're coming up, why aren't you doing? So since when was the last donation you gave to us? Right? Social work needs money. So then put your money where your mouth is, you know? Stop talking so big. You know, it's another thing is, okay, I got lots of money I'd like to give you. What kind of social work can you do with it? That's another thing. That's a valuable question. But just to come up and say, why you're not doing, it's like, you know, there's probably so many things he's not doing that the government wants from him. You know? Like that. Is his lawn mowed? You know, is his house not look like it's about to fall apart? You know what I'm saying? Did he pay his taxes? You know, so many things like this.
Consider giving the answer to this person that we're doing the best welfare work is preaching.
Yes, yes. That of course. So it's just that, you know, you can harass them before you give them the straightforward answer. So the point is yes, we're doing the highest welfare work. Why? Is because people are doing things. Why are people poor? Why are this and that? Because they don't follow God's laws. Therefore, Then by preaching about being God conscious, then all these other things will happen. Those will happen automatically. But the point is he's not doing a great job. So then why is it, you know, how much welfare work is he doing? He's pointing a finger at us. It's like, okay, you can say, but you know, let the church come and say that. Let the local parish priest come and say, where's the welfare work you guys are doing? You know, let the, you know, the local bishop or the, you know, local imam or somebody come and say that. Why are they saying it? What is he doing? When was the last time he gave, you know, 10 cents to UNICEF? You know what I'm saying? Why would UNICEF have to go, 1 cent will give, you know, all the vaccinations for this disease for one child in Africa? Why do they have to say 1 cent? 5 cents will feed him for a month. Why do they have to say that?
That's how much
they give. People don't want to give anything. So at least then giving 10 cents, because people will give the change in their pocket. So they're willing to take it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Who's doing these things? Right? Arjuna already pointed out that they're going to stop after this war. So that was 5,000 years ago. So you could see Arjuna was a great mystic. He could see the future. Does that make sense? So the whole point is it's nice that they say these things, but what's their qualification to be saying it first? Second is that because they don't have the qualification, they're making this complaint, then it makes it hard for them to actually understand the answer. So the point is you have to make them qualified to understand the answer.
Well, I've seen the devotees change, or do you just to satisfy this kind of...
There's no need to change. That's the whole point, is that we already are doing the highest. It means if somebody is, it mentions the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, that if they're wealthy people, people in nobility, position, anything that we would consider great opulence, you know, in the great exalted levels, it's all because of devotional service. Because where does the person who's done a little bit of devotional service, not seriously, go after he dies? So that's the next birth. Heavenly planets. Then the next birth is in wealthy, religious, like that. So where is it coming from? You understand? So that's the whole thing. Is we're thinking it's because they went out and worked hard. No, it's because they did devotional service. So all we're trying to do is get him to do some more. You know what I'm saying? So we go to the rich man, but we only get money. So you're going to the rich man and get him to chant Hare Krishna. He'll work out how to give money. We don't have to worry that he gave, you know, $500 to Ratha Yatra. You know, you get him chanting, he'll give a lot more. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. That was Prabhupada's idea of life membership. It wasn't that you raise money, that's a side thing, but that's only an initial thing, you have something. But it was this, if you give them association, the idea of staying in the temples wasn't for free, wasn't that it was, you know, joining like a club where you have, you know, benefits, you know, you got the card, you know, and then you can stay in this lounge and get this limousine, and you know, that's how devotees would present it. It was ideas that this rich man is staying at our temple rather than a 5-star hotel. He'll be chanting, taking prasad, associated with devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, seeing the deities. Right? So that was the whole point of the life membership, was to engage these people who already have Sukriti and now cultivate it to where it becomes bhakti. But we just take it as money raising.
Was it forced upon?
Yes, you know. So that's the difficulty. Then it's not preaching. And so then those same persons, when somebody says like this, then they're the same ones who are going to try to adjust it where it is just welfare work. So it's the consciousness that's the problem. It's not that doing the welfare work. Prabhupada said, you know, have, like we said, every 10, it means if you took a map and drew lines, you know, every 10 miles, and then the other way every 10 miles, on the latitude and longitude, he wanted a prasad distribution center at each one of those points. Who's doing that? You understand? It's not even a discussion. Have you ever heard it come up in a discussion? No.
I haven't even heard that like that at every point.
That's what he said, every 10 miles. He said, you know. And it means within, 10 miles of the temple, no one should be hungry. Yeah, so you just take where the temple is, you know, just, I think, draw a circle, and then just see that everybody within that is not going hungry. That they're all getting prasad. Who's doing that? So that's the whole thing, is that, and then we're talking about we should be doing welfare work? Prabhupada already gave us what welfare work we could be doing that would give the most benefit. Because everybody will take prasad. Everybody needs to eat. You know? Like that. So then that's you get the maximum from that. So that's the point, is being realistic, is that who's doing it? So it's again just talk. It's just being distracted. That's what we're talking about, Mike, as you brought up about, you know, all the taps. You know? Like that. So they, you know. So yeah. Yes.
It says here that Bhagavad Sabda purifies the heart of the fortunate soul.
Of the fortunate soul.
Yeah, and here is the Lord's glory. So is there any prerequisite for Bhagavatam? Because in the first verse it says that, when you said that it's for those in pure goodness.
Yes.
So that's the qualification?
Isn't that why you're all here? No. Means it's for, means in other words, the full appreciation of it's going to be by those who are in pure goodness. That's why it's the Paramahamsa Sattva Purana. They can take the most advantage. But because hearing the glories of the Lord is purifying, therefore anybody can hear. But now who's a fortunate soul? Right? You have the liberated souls, the Nityabhadas, and you have the Nityabhadas and the Nityamuktas. So who's in between? Huh? Nityabhadas, that means those who are the Bhagya Jeeves, so the fortunate souls. So what defines a Bhagya Jeev? He came in contact with the devotees. So, in other words, those who have come in contact with the devotees and therefore are interested in the process, or even if they don't know, just they've come in contact and they're hearing Bhagavatam, they're fortunate. You know, you can say now they become more seriously fortunate when they take up, have developed faith. And then more again when they take, you know, surrender to the process and take up Bhajana Kriya. Right? You know, and more fortunate again when they become stable, more fortunate when they get a taste, even more when they become attached, even more than that when they come to the point of ecstasy, even more than that when they come to Purva Rag, and then the most when they come to Prema. Right? So that's your gradations of Bhagya Jeeves. Okay. Because Nitya Mukta means those who are on prema. Nityabhada means us. We've been here so long, we can't count.
We are Bhagya Jivas.
We are Bhagya Jivas, but the Bhagya Jiva was a Nityabhada who's come in contact with devotees.
What bothers me is Nitya, of course.
Which one?
Nityabhada.
Well, here's just like this. It's, which do you worry about, the beginning or the end? Let us say the end. Okay, so if the beginning, the end is eternal, what do you worry about the beginning?
Oh, so it's only about the beginning.
So, you know what I'm saying, is that the devotional service may have started now, but it will go eternally. So that means that, and that will stay like that. Well, that means that Nityabhada technically is not eternal, because it will end. It had a beginning, it has an end. Right? Devotional service may have a beginning, but there's no end. And technically it's not, it's the natural position, it's just taking it up. Right? Because all we ever do is actually things in relation to the Lord, we just don't do it in the right attitude. Does that make sense? Because the nitya just means it's so long we can't calculate. Krishna knows when it started, but how will that, how will that have any meaning to you?
If there is an end to it, no meaning.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. Because no one worries about it. I heard someone make a point. The person who goes to prison, he only remembers 2 days.
Yeah,
the day comes and the day goes. Like that. So we've forgotten the day we came, but we'll remember the day we go. Right. And even that, who cares? You know, as long as you're there, it's, you know, in between's a blur. So that's the whole point. So this thing of getting involved in semantics over this nitya element—that you were eternally—how can you return? How can you eternally be in a place that's not eternally manifest? How does that? How can you logically present that? No, but the point is then where did you start? You start, you know, it's. How did that happen? What if you became, you know, if you were always here, where did it, how would it begin? Because Prabhupada said somehow or another we become envious. So that means that there was a time, a moment when we became envious that started it. But when it is, it's just like how many grains of sand are there in the universe? What do we say? Do we give a number with, you know, with a big number with little numbers, you know, up in the... Yeah, we say it's unlimited, innumerable. Does that mean that it can't be counted? Technically, it could. Krishna could count them. You know what I'm saying? You might have to use, you know, 10 to the power of this to the power of, you know, to be able to, you know, get it on a piece of paper. Does that make sense? So we can, so therefore it's Nityapada. Is that okay?
Maharaj, can you understand what you're saying? Unless you meet a devotee, you will be here forever.
Yeah, unless you meet a devotee, he'll stay here forever. But everybody will meet a devotee because they're all out and, you know, they're everywhere. So at some point you're going to meet a devotee, even if it's like, what was that one you were saying about, you're driving down in the open highway in the middle of nowhere and you drive over something, and what was that? And you go out and it's a Krishna book. Okay, so here he's making the point is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's the reservoir of all religious principles. In other words, relationship with him is based, that interacting with him, that's real religion. So here we have just reflection, because who are we dealing with here in the material world? Everybody's dealing with who? Material nature. But how is the material nature working?
Brahman,
Krishna's potency. And how is it being sanctioned? Paramatma. Right? So everybody is dealing with the Supreme Lord. Right? So that means then there, all the ways you're supposed to deal, they all come from him. Right? Does that make sense? But we're trying to get, you know, the point is he's a person. At the same time, he's entered everything. So that's why we deal nicer with everything, because it's him. And we're doing it to please him as a person. Right? So that takes care of everything. Everything gets connected that way. Srila Prabhupada, advancing the same line of logic in these remarks made on 4 September 1976, is unambiguous about what purifying principle is operative in seemingly, quote-unquote, different cases of Bhagavad Dharma. Whether it's the case of we of the 21st century hearing about Krishna from the BBT edition of Srimad Bhagavatam, or a case 5,000 years ago of a fortunate soul personally serving the lotus feet of Lord Krishna's Lila Sarup, or a case at some other time of someone offering Archan Seva to the temple, Vishnu Vigraha, Srila Prabhupada said. If you want to know Adhoksaja, that is the real purpose of religion, right? Because as we mentioned, the real purpose of religion, because religion is in the middle, its real purpose is to be connected to the Lord. So that means you have to be, the direct is obvious. Okay, chanting the holy name is directly the Supreme Lord. But what about all the other things in my life? That's the indirect, that's Adhoksaja. So I have to be able to connect religious principles through the transcendental understanding that I'm the soul and he's the Supreme Soul. And we have a relationship. Right? So if you want to know Adhoksaja, that is the real purpose of religion. Religion is not a type of ritualistic ceremony. That is the external. The real fact is how we contact the Adhoksaja, who is beyond our material conception. But Bhakti Yoga, if you take to Bhakti Yoga, then it is possible. Anarto Pashamam. Then Anarto will be cleansed, things which are not wanted. So the problem is not the house. The problem is that we think it's my house and it's for my enjoyment. That's the problem. The building is not the problem. You understand? That's the whole thing. The building's not the problem. The family, the money, this position, anything. That's not, because it's all Krishna. And Krishna is that anyway. The problem is we don't see it connected to Krishna. We're not seeing how Krishna enters into everything. Right? So then that's what you're asking, why so much talk on the primary creation? That is how Krishna enters into it. And then how the forms are made is the secondary creation. Because always what's going to be, what's the primary creation is going to be primary, the secondary creation is secondary, supportive. Right? So if we understand this primary creation, then we can understand Adhoksaja. Then Brahma's creation has meaning. Because then everything we see, the cosmic manifestation, is then engaged in the Lord's service. Because we see it in connection with the Lord. Yes.
Can you see how for the Bhagavatam there's so much emphasis on how the Lord entered.
Yes.
In modern science, they don't know anything. It's just very meager what they can talk about this aspect. They just have some mystical thing going, but they can't even relate to that.
No, no. But if they would relate to it, it'd answer all their problems. All the anxieties they have in trying to deal with their scientific theories would go away if they accepted the Supreme Lord. Because otherwise, how is it you take the smallest thing that they know and split it, and it causes the biggest, you know, riot that they know? You know what I'm saying? If I take a pomegranate seed, you know, and I take my hammer and I smash it, how much trouble is there? Not so much. Probably doesn't even get outside the end of the hammer. Okay? Now let's take a, you know, I take a watermelon, you know, and have all my friends stand around and I smash it with a, what did we say? 2.5 kilo hammer. Then what happens? Yeah, everybody gets a bit wet. Okay. You know, what happens if we have one of those award-winning, you know, watermelon contests, you know, like that? We toss that off of the, you know, fifth floor into the crowd of a bunch of crowd of people. Right, you know, even more of a problem. Right, so we're used to the biggest thing makes the biggest problem. Here we're taking the smallest thing and making the biggest problem. So how's that happening?
Inconceivable.
Yeah, inconceivable. So it's so if they would start there with the Lord, then their whole scientific process would be so much more scientific. Right now it's real. When they talk about chance, they have to have it as a major theory in their process, because that's the only way they're coming about it. It's by chance. Right, you know, modern medicine, and it's so advanced, all the, you know, not these old, what do you call it? You know, tribal or village or, you know, rural herbal things. You know, the guy came across penicillin, right? Penicillin was what? Green mold on a piece of bread. How long does it take for a piece of bread to go green? Some days. Who leaves a piece of bread around their kitchen that's going green? Why didn't the others find it? Because everybody else would have thrown it out, fed it to the pigs, did something. So, and then they're the great, you know, saviors of mankind. You know, and the bugs don't even care about it anymore. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the fun point, is that it's by chance. It's by chance. You know what I'm saying? It's like some guy in South, you know, Kerala, with minimal, you know, money other than what he does for his regular Ayurvedic treatment, has already worked out cures for cancer. Because he's already starting with the science, and then he's just applying it in one particular disease and developing it. But these others, they spend billions. Why? Because it's hit and miss. You know, try this, you know, on the cancer. How does that do it? Try my grandmother's, you know, cheesecake on it. Does that, you know, try the, you know, the dirt from the bottom of my shoe on it. You know, it's like, it's just, that's the problem, is it's just chance. And then once one thing kind of seems to work, then they have their educated guess. Now they work in that and get a certain distance. You understand? So therefore, chance has to be part of their theory, because otherwise then their whole methodology wouldn't have a basis.
The whole scientific process is based on that.
Yeah. And then if you have conclusion, they're afraid of that. Why? Because they don't have any. So it's actually not because there's a superior, it's because then it makes them look inferior. And as we mentioned before, Mr. Gringo is not about to look inferior. That's number one in their book. That's not going to happen. You know? Right. Yeah. Yes?
Science is one thing, but we see in the world religions,
okay. They
have the same problem. They can't explain how spirit transforms into matter. It's a very major difficulty.
Yes, yes.
And that's why people go to science. They can answer this question, but religion, they can't answer it either.
But they could say they have less of a sophisticated answer than the scientists will give you an answer that you don't understand. So, yeah. You know, it sounds like the other ones will say you just have faith, or don't worry about that, or they start looking around for, you know, stakes and piles of hay, you know, stuff like that. You know, you kind of get the idea is that, okay, don't ask this one, you know. So it started from there, because beforehand, let us say you go back to the ancient Greeks or the Romans or the Mayans or the Incans or any of the Orientals, or did they have a problem between religion and science?
No.
Not at all. No. It was one, you know, homogenous entity. You had your, and everything that they were doing, they were powerful in politics, economics, warfare, you know, their laws and everything. But which was considered the top of everything?
Religion,
the theology. So everything was based on that. But when Christianity came in, it had to remove that because they didn't have an answer. Because technically, if you're going to do it, you would have to use Judaic, which they did for some years. But then when you want to throw that out, then what do you base? What's the theology for your religion? Basically, you start with zero. Right? And then if you're going to introduce pagans, you can't use theirs either. So then you have a problem. So the real problem comes is this. The Western culture is based on getting rid of science. And then they're the ones that are scientific. And, you know, it's just like this. You know, if you open the magazine, who's got the 5-page spread on being, you know, ecological? You know, like that, showing all the plants green and all the kids smiling and everything like that. Who did that? Not Greenpeace.
No.
You know, like that. No, it's either the big oil companies or the automobile manufacturers. You know, in other words, those who do the worst of the environment, they're the ones. You know, in the assembly is there, you know, you have the teachers, you have students, you have the senior members of the community like that, and you have that big monster check. Who's the one with the big green on their face that's so religious?
The business guy.
You know what I'm saying? But would he be there if it was just a matter of, if there wasn't that big check, there wasn't the picture, it didn't come in the papers, he wasn't, every time he came around, everybody's licking his shoes. Would he be giving that kind of donation? Good chance no. You understand? So that's the whole thing. It's therefore the culture that's done the most at destroying everything is the one that presents them that they're the savior of mankind.
It leaves us with one option. Krishna consciousness is the only solution.
Basically.
In the 60s, I heard an article from the author saying that one of the reasons so many ecologists turned to the East because the Christians, let's say, ecological treaties had failed completely, so they had to look for something.
It's just people are already doing it. It says that the point is there, that's the importance of tradition. You know, so in a culture that prides itself in breaking tradition, then that's the whole thing, is they want to break tradition and then establish their own. Right? It means if it's not about, you know, being free, why does every city have to have a McDonald's? Why can't we be free and not have one? Why can't we be unique and different and not have one? You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is it's just talk. All it is that I don't like what the other person's doing, therefore it has to change. But, you know, once we get it where I can do what I want to do, then that's what it'll be. And then what's the basis of it? Just what I'm doing. It's not that I care about, you know, what's America Vespucci is, you know, what, you know, his concept when he landed on, you know, American soil. You know, what he wanted for the place. That's what I'm trying to, you know, carry on the line. It's just what I want to do. Or even, let's say, it's more it's what I can get away with. What of what I want to do that I can get away with. You know, there is some restriction. You know, we have to acknowledge the democratic element here. Does that make sense? So the whole point is why we go into these things. It's not that we're caring about issues or this or that. It's that the basis of the consciousness is where the problem is. Because previously, no other culture in the world, no other civilization except the Western civilization, has ever had any problem with combining science and God consciousness and working cooperatively with nature, which is God's. There isn't one. There's none. Now, how they go about it may be sometimes a little strange, but, you know. But the point is they none of them have it. It's only this one exclusive culture has a problem. And then somehow or another, it's their culture that's supposed to be for the whole world. You know? Like that. So the somewhat intelligent people worry about that. The real intelligent, like you said, look east. Okay, so, but bhakti yoga, if you take to bhakti yoga, then it is possible. Right? Then anartha will be cleansed, things which are not wanted. So only through bhakti yoga. His other processes won't actually cleanse. That's the whole point. They'll clean to a particular point, but not to the point where it goes away. You know, it's just like you could, let's say, you have the weeds growing in the backyard, so you just come in and cut them off short. You haven't gotten rid of the weed, it just is not so obvious. It'll just grow up again. That. Our life is meant for understanding God. This is human life. Atato brahma jigyasa. Human life is meant for this purpose. The animals, they are jigyasa. They're jigyasa inquiry. There are many, many inquiries. And answers also, just like we see in the newspaper, so many news. Unlimited number of news. But there is no news of how to understand God. There is no news. This is anartha. So, Lokasya janata. They have no information because they are animals. The animal has no information. Neither he has got capacity to understand what he is. What is the relationship with God? What he has to do? Sambandha, abideya, prayojana. The whole Vedic principles are based on these three principles. Sambandha. Sambandha means relationship. Everyone says there is God. But what is God and what is our relationship with God? That is to be understood. Sambandha. Then as soon as relationship is understood, then our real activity begins. So here's another one. This is what? Oh, just Srila Prabhupada said. What is this from?
September the 4th, 1976.
So this is a class. Oh, yeah, there it is. Remarks on September 4th, 1976. So you can see here also the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Because sometimes it's asked, well, why do we always emphasize Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana? Because it is the essential, I say, fundament, how you categorize everything. Because if you see according to that, then you'll always see logically. Otherwise, you'll leave something out. Right? That real activities is called bhakti, and the material activities, which is not bhakti. That is Maya. Therefore, in the Bhagavad, it is said, Dharma svanushtita pumsam vishrakshena kata suya not payed yati ratim shram shrama evihi kevalam. You may be a very religious person, executing the ritualistic ceremonies very nicely, very expertly, but if you do not know adhoksaja, vishrakshena, vishrakshena is another name of Krishna, if you do not become anxious to understand atato brahma jigyasa, then all these ritualistic ceremony of religion, of different kinds of religion, shrama evahi kevalam, simply waste of time. The jnanas, they are simply trying to understand. No, you can go on understanding, but if you do not come to the understanding, abhideya. No, abhideya is acting actually. Sambandha is understanding. So if you do not come to the platform of acting, abhideya, then simply understanding will not help you. And acting also with the aim to achieve. So that has been explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is the aim? Prema pumarta mahan. That is wanted. That is wanted. You have to develop your natural love for God, Krishna. Then it is perfect. That, therefore, arto pasham. As soon as we come to the stage, how to love Krishna, then are all anartas, misgivings, are finished. Anarto pasham shakshat bhakti yogam and hoksajay. So, if you have knowledge, first you have to want knowledge, right? Because only animals don't look for that. It means there is, of course, question and answer, as Prabhupada points about. the animals, when they wake up, then they start talking. It's a question, yeah, where's food, where's this, that, like that. That's what they're looking for. But they're not. They have no capacity to understand themselves or to understand God. So that's the first point to understand. Then having knowing that, then you should apply it. Otherwise, if you just know it and perform rituals to get benefit, you know, just material benefit, then that's still a waste of time. So then apply it in Abhideya. Right? Then activity should have a goal. So what's the goal? The goal can again come back to us. Right? Then it has to be to please Lord, prema. So that means everything we're discussing comes down to these three things, just so that we understand. Why? Because then all our anarthas, misgivings, are finished. Right? So probably here it translates anarthas as misgivings. The doubt means it's just we don't quite catch how it goes together. That's not an anartha. Right? Misgiving. Or one can say, oh, but he's always doubtful. Or is it doubt? Was it doubting? Thomas is the one who's doubting? He was the academic, right?
Yeah. Thomas, yeah.
Yeah. Means of the apostles, one was the academic. He's the one that turned him in. He's the one that, you know, did all that kind of stuff. So it means...
Judah was the one who turned
him in. Oh, Judah was the one, but Thomas was the other who always, they always doubt about whether, you know, what about logically. Yeah, like that. They're always like that. Yeah, I guess you could say the fishermen were convinced because they saw there was a bunch of fish there. You know, so they were already convinced this works, you know. Okay, so misgivings. So that's the real thing, is that we have an attachment to something in a particular way. Right, we have an attachment to see things in a material way or to get a material benefit. Therefore, we have a problem. The doubt is just I don't quite see how it connects. Right, it doesn't make sense to me. But as soon as you logically present it with, you know, examples and that, we should be satisfied. But what keeps us from understanding is the anartha. So the misgiving. So that's the real anartha.
So until there is a desire to understand, it remains a doubt. But as soon as you conclude, then it becomes a misgiving.
Yes, if you conclude on the wrong position, then it becomes a misgiving. When it's about ourselves, then it becomes a misgiving. Because then it becomes a doubt's not a identity. A misgiving's an identity. That's what I was saying. The doubting Thomas means then being doubtful, not trusting anybody, or not, you know, unless you can see it with the senses, that's a misgiving. You know, just that you said something, it doesn't make sense because you said this and now you're saying that, so that doesn't make sense. That's a doubt. You know, so you just want clarity. A misgiving is you actually have an attachment to a particular thing. That's
right. Arjun, another point. That first knowledge, then you have to apply. But you need that the inspiration, Pradyumna, has to be there for you to apply.
Yes, but that's part of Samadha. Like that. You know, so that naturally goes there. But because the main point is attraction. So if there's attraction to Krishna, whatever you're attracted to is what you're willing to work for. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Those misgivings, yes, we all have them because we're here, still here.
Basically.
And they will.
Oh, you mean if you're sitting in the class and your last anartha goes, and then you just see them just raising up, and going through, you know, the music comes up, everything, and they're going, and everyone goes, and then they hit the ceiling, and then the music. You know.
By our process, they also can be cleansed.
Yes, no, everything goes. But it means, yes. Then you can see everything in relationship to Krishna, you deal with everything in relationship to Krishna. So therefore, those things that you're attached to no longer become an obstacle. They're no longer an anartha. Right? In other words, if I engage artha in the Lord's service, that's called devotional service. I engage the senses, my facilities, my duties, my position as a living entity. Does that make sense? You know, all this in the Lord's service, then that's devotional service. So anartha means it's when I have facility, I don't engage it in Krishna's service. That's what's going to, and why? Because I have an attachment that this is going to give me a particular happiness. You know, security, right? Gain and safety. That's basically what it all boils down to. Prabhupada emphasizes sat sangha here, association. Sangha was sat. Sat means devotee. His divine grace said in London on 17th August 1973, sat means God. One gets satsang by hearing Bhagavat Shabda, which requires one to associate with Bhagavatas, whose lips are always decorated with the glories of Lord Adhoksija. Then, anarto pashanam sakshat bhakti yogam adhoksija follows in good order. Satsanga is the vidhi. The positive measure the scriptures tell us to be, must be done, such as Lord Chaitanya's personal injunction to Sri Sanatan Goswami, Satsanga Krishna Seva Bhagavata Nam. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 24.193. The Nisheda, or the stricture, that is the opposite side of the coin of any vidhi, is what we are indirectly ordered to avoid. Associate, yes, offend, no. This is nicely summed up in a purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.10.17. Nished just means, it means nished is what should be done. The restriction. Nished means restriction. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in... Okay, this is nicely... Okay, summed up in a purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.10.17. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructing Rupa Goswami at Dasha Ashwamedha Ghat in Prayag, he pointed out very clearly the seriousness of offending a Vaishnava. He compared the Vaishnava aparad to Hati Mata, a mad elephant. When a mad elephant enters a garden, it spoils all the fruits and flowers. Similarly, if one offends a Vaishnava, he spoils all his spiritual assets. Offending a Brahmana is very dangerous, and this was known to Maharaj Rahugana. He therefore frankly admitted his fault. There are many dangerous things: thunderbolts, fire, Yamaraja's punishment, the punishment of Lord Shiva's trident, and so forth. But none is considered as serious as offending a Brahmana like Jatavarat. Therefore, Maharaj Rahugana immediately descended from his palanquin and fell flat before the lotus feet of the Brahmana Jatavarat, just to be excused. Yeah, so we don't necessarily take it how important it is. You know, because we basically just take our, and apply our lifestyle into Krishna consciousness. And so, in general, living entities are critical. But you could say it's specific, kind of, it seems to be part of the bohemian culture, even though you're talking about, you know, love and fraternity and all these nice things, is a very critical of whoever's not in the room. So it's just part of the whole scene. Does that make sense? So when you start with that as your group and expand, then it just becomes part of the natural culture that you always criticize those who are not involved in a way that you feel they should be, which may actually be correct or may not. But the difficulty is that we have that the concept of criticizing others is very much part of the scene, and then it's supported by, because we make comments about the Mayavadis and the Sahajyas and this and that, but we have to be very careful when it comes to devotees, right? Like that. Then it's the point is there, but then one has to find the get to the root of it, just what's specifically wrong, and leave the personal element out of it. Does that make sense? So when we're finding fault, we keep it on the impersonal. It means it's generic. But when we come to serving Krishna, then we try to get it to the personal.
This is why we can see Krishna actually, because we see fault in everything, and Krishna is without faults, so we can see him.
Yeah, that could be a nice, 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 nice. observation.
Yes, because we don't have the same view that he has.
Yes, so Anartha stands in between in between Krishna and us.
Yes. That's the whole point of this article.
Oh.
Is in the beginning. Okay. Oh yeah. We learn here that all pollutants of consciousness, things that are actually unwanted, anartha, by pure soul, stand between the eternal servant of Krishna in the heart and Abhideya.
Mm-hmm. Abhideya means service.
Yes, service. Mm-hmm. Right? So, in other words, what stands between us and serving Krishna, seeing Krishna face to face, is our anarthas. You remove the anarthas, then that's why when you reduce the anarthas to 75, the 75% are gone, only 25 is left, then that's considered advanced.
This is called nishtha.
Yes, that's nishtha, that's your madhyamanika. Like that. So it doesn't mean that it's all gone, but it means it's gone to the predominance is gone. Therefore, it means it's a secure, how do you say? What do you say when you have more of the shares? You know what I'm saying? Somebody has 51%, somebody has 49. It's not so secure, but 75 and 25, now that's a strong position. Major shareholder, I think. So the major shares are in devotional service, right?
Is that a moment?
A moment.
Is that what they say? Is that you could be Krishna consciousness a moment if you could not
criticize,
or then you could get the 75%
share? As long as you can maintain it.
Yeah.
it doesn't matter. However you go with that. That's why it says, beg, borrow, or steal, but get to that position. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I think it was like, I can't remember what was it.
Not sure. I think we shut the dummy in for him.
That he saw that. Because the devotee of the temple program is in one place, but Prabhupada stayed somewhere else. And then so a car every day would come and then take Prabhupada. And generally, some of the senior devotees would get in the car with Prabhupada. So he decided, I want to do this. So then while everybody is, Jai Prabhupada and the kirtan coming out of the car, he already ran around, got in the car, and was sitting in the seat. So then they kind of get in, and everyone kind of looks at him, but no one wants to make a scene at the time. And Prabhupada just kind of looks, and then, they drive off. Then he was informed, we don't do that afterwards. Brahmananda. So, yeah, 61 second after. Because Prabhupada had a place at 26 second avenue, so 61, I guess it was not far away, but it was just a short run. So that's the thing, is that you're bold enough, to try to take it, So then it's no time.
Maharaj, I was contemplating on what you said, that the Madhyamadikari has, most of it has gone, the Anarthas have gone, then he can relate to new people because he doesn't identify as much with their condition, so therefore he can find what's Krishna.
Yes, because it's in giving examples, then you can give a broader range if you don't have an attachment to them. As soon as the attachment's there, it narrows. So those who can relate to how you presented it will do. That's also why you choose like-minded, because then whatever they say, whether it's general or has that personal element, then it still makes sense to you. But in the general preaching in classes, it's always more generic, so then you have to try to develop that. So, yeah. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. Devotees are addressed as Bhagavatas because they are as good as God himself. How can that be? Because the anarthas that pollute the heart, that spoil the sense of self with diseased upadis like karmi and jnani, cannot take root in the hearts of those who talk and hear only of Krishna. Such a devotee is no foolish villager wasting his life
err on gossip. A devotee is vidvam, established in transcendental knowledge, just like the author of Bhagavatam himself, Srila Vyasadeva. No devotee worthy of being addressed as a Bhagavata has time for gramya katha. Therefore, Mahaprabhu orders his followers, gramya katha na shunibe. Don't listen. Right? You don't have to worry about, because it's like this. If you speak, do you hear?
Yes.
Yes. So therefore, if I just say don't hear gramya katha, means you're not talking it either.
Yes.
Right? So like that. So if you don't listen, so if others are listening, then you always have something else to do. If you want to be learned, His Divine Grace said on 18th December in Bombay, then you have to read Bhagavatam. Vidvams chakre sattvata. Vidvam means Vyasadeva. He compiled Bhagavatam for the education of these rascals. Right, so here answers them. So you don't have to be a paramahamsa, you know, situated in goodness. You basically just at least have to be qualified as a rascal. Right? Yeah. If you can qualify because of being situated in pure goodness, great. But if not, then a rascal will do. Okay. Nate vidhu svarta gatim. The same thing. They do not know what is their self-interest. Nate vidhu svarta gatim hi vishnu. And another place, artha. This is anartha. I mean anartha. This is anartha. Without knowing the real self-interest, they are engaged in so many so-called duties, right? So it's supposed to be, that's why Shastra gives duties. Then you know what you're supposed to do. Because if we go with duties that we make up, then how are we sure that they're going to work? Well, all the duties that are given in Shastra are in harmony with nature, right? It may not be the best thing for you to be doing. It may cultivate some attachments, but even to cultivate those attachments, you have to cultivate some element of detachment or knowledge or respect or service, submission. Does that make sense? Anything recommended by Scripture. So even though it may be not so well established on one side, the Scripture will catch you on the other side. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So then the whole point is that then slowly, these others being cultivated, it will have effect on that the central anartha. Does that make sense? Because you're doing something that's recommended. So you're what you're doing, the ritual is based on the Scripture. So that aspect is goodness. Your purpose of doing it may not be, so that's passion. And the why you've chosen that as a goal may be because you're in ignorance. But at least there's some touch of goodness there, so it may develop with time.
Mark? But,
yes.
So can we say as a devotee is to be developing Krishna consciousness, so our duty might change?
We could say it means you have the element of duties may change, but you also have the element where we just become aware of our duties. And that. So in other words, we switch from our standard, you know, Malecha Yavana duties over actual to what we should be doing. You have that aspect. And you have that, yes, just naturally, just like the person is young, so his duties is as a brahmachari. Then with time, that naturally changes. He becomes a grihastha, which naturally changes. He becomes vanaprastha. So you do have that aspect also. So you have both. One is actually understanding what you should be doing and doing it, so it changes. Or that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and then it changes. You know, or a combination. You know, by the time... means you're doing what you shouldn't be doing. By the time you figure out that what you should actually be doing, then it's also time to change.
So it's both.
Yeah, both going at once. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's why then we don't engage in so-called duties. We engage in duties that are recommended by Scripture, because that will work nicely. We go by things not recommended, then we may be getting one benefit on one side, but we'll be losing on another. That's the thing, is that in the Vedic, you won't lose. You may not be getting the best benefit you can, so therefore we call that a waste of time. When we say Shrama Eva Kevala, we're talking about doing nice Vedic things, but not doing it in connection to Krishna. That's a waste of time. So let alone making up your own and not following the Vedic injunctions, how much a waste of time is that?
Right. So in other words, following the Vedics is a waste of time. Not following the Vedics is a total waste of time. Is that...
Because you lost time to do this, and it will give no benefit.
Yeah. Because otherwise you just stay in the modes of passion and ignorance. And someone who dies in the modes of passion and ignorance, what's their next birth?
Lower.
You always go down. You know, goodness will maintain human. Yeah, that makes sense. And then you have human who's not human. Like that. We were discussing them before the break. One thing, it was just on that, it was the to note, when did the Dark Ages start? The Middle Ages? Officially?
300-something. Early Middle Ages, 200-something.
200-300, like that, yeah. And then they came out of it in the Renaissance, right?
Yeah.
So that would be like...
All right, 1200, 1300 was the... 1600 was the Renaissance.
Yeah, okay. So it started there. Okay, so now, just look at it just on these things, what we were discussing this morning, the consciousness. What happened around 300, 400 A.D.?
Christianity really developed.
Yeah, Christianity became the official religion. It really developed and spread. You know, they already had burnt down all the libraries, you know, done all the good stuff. You know? So then it goes into Dark Age, because that means, and now when we talk about, you know, Babylonian culture, Syrian culture, you know, who was before them? Sumerians, you know, like this. Or
Jordan, there's something in Jordan.
I'm not sure, because there's all these little ones. But anytime you talk about these cultures, like the Mayan culture, you know, the Inca culture, the Aztec culture, where they developed, were they big? You know, even you have the others up in north, where they're a bit more wild. But they had these huge nations and all working together and all these things and had codes and laws. And you understand? So development of art and sciences and everything was greatly developed. So when we say Dark Ages, it means there was no development of everything. What happened?
Everybody was burned.
Yeah. Anybody with a brain was burned. Yeah. Okay. So then the whole point comes down is that they had removed the culture that had connected the day-to-day life to God consciousness. Right? So they had done a nice thing by introducing consciousness of the Supreme Lord. But they did so at the expense of the whole culture of how to connect your life with God, other than just having that faith. But otherwise, your day-to-day life technically had no connection. And this was a constant anxiety we see of anybody with a brain. Therefore, in the 1100s, 12, 1300s, like that, that's when they started all this inquiry and they had to address these things. And then eventually it came out as a Renaissance. Right? But then it's taken the other way, where it's just science and no religious aspect, and then you have another problem. Right? So it seems extreme is the, how you say, the natural, how you say, proclivity of the Western culture.
The moral was extremely valued in this, the moral aspect was extremely...
Yes, so morality becomes more prominent rather than philosophy and these duties and other things. They talk about it, but then that's always the thing, is I'm doing my duty, I'm being taken advantage of. You know, I'm a serf, you know, but not a serfee. If he was a serfee, he wouldn't have had an anxiety, but being just a serf, then he's a problem. Right? So, you know, so that's the difficulty. And then... So that's what we're meaning, is that this combination of seeing adhokshaja, how Krishna enters into whatever we're doing, at the same time being able to see him as a person beyond that, this is the key that keeps the whole thing together. Because if you only see him beyond that, which is basically how all the modern religions work, then the difficulty, they can't see how he's here in the world. And then the pagans see how he's in the world, but can't see how he's beyond as the singular supreme authority. Right? So Chintaveda Veda deals with both of them balanced. So therefore, the philosophy, the culture, everything becomes perfectly combined. So to try to use something else and say it's superior, it's not very superior. Like that. because it took 1,000 years basically for the Europeans to develop up to a culture then where it was, you know, something happening. And then they went out and conquered everybody else in the world. But all those other cultures were going for thousands of years. And they're saying, so there's 1,000-year lag because they removed the connection between the Lord and his creation.
It seems also to distance him so far away from everybody is some way to control people.
Yes, that's also there. But you know, that's getting into more specifics. That's your age of enlightenment. Is because they want to remove that because of the economic and political power you have. Because otherwise, how hard are you... Are you going to get a guy to work so hard that he can't take care of his family and everything like that? No, he'd rather spend the time with the family. But if you could separate these two and make the external around you and not relationships and that important, then it comes in. So it is. It's a technical thing that comes up for... It's an economic, political thing. That's the fun part, is if you look at history from the state of consciousness that you're going with, it comes out a lot different, you know. So many times the things that are seen as the great advancements in society many times are not, and the things that are seen as what's backwards are actually, you know, much more valued in life. Krishna says, Sarva dharmam, give up all these duties. But they will not do. So here he's saying so-called duties. Well, I mean, in any case, all these so-called duties, give them up, whether they're Vedic or non-Vedic. Right? Give them up for pleasing Krishna. Right? So saying is that, oh, we don't want to follow the Vedic because that's just for Indians, you know. Like this, we want to follow something else. But that also has to be given up. When Krishna says Sarva dharmam, he means all of them. So whether it's Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or lower, all of them have to be given up. Does that make sense? And it has to be that whatever you're doing is to please Krishna and nothing else. Is that... Yeah? Yes? No? Okay, he wasn't a tell. Okay. Therefore, Vyasadeva says... Anarto pashanam sakshat. These unnecessary engagements cannot be given up. Anarto pashanam sakshat bhakti yogam adhoksajay. To teach them bhakti yoga. And anarto pashanam sakshat bhakti yogam adhoksajay. Lokas ya janato. These rascals, they do not know it. Lokasya ajanata. Ajanato lokasya. They do not know how to get free from the unwanted situation. But to get them free, vidya, Vyasadeva is vidvan, vidvams. Right? So its point is, this Prabhupada can work on this thing, taking it doesn't say the year, taking the words, and then on the words show all the connections and everything. But he just uses it in a way so that we can use his examples so we can catch it. So here he's saying that you can't give up unnecessary engagements unless you have bhakti yoga. Why? Because the people don't want it. They're rascals. They don't know the process, and so they're opposed to it. So whether they're a smarta or whether they're, you know, a malecha, it doesn't matter. They don't know the system. Though one is following the Vedas, one's not. They don't know that whatever you have connect to the Lord. Right? You do that, so that's what Vyasadeva knows. And so then in his maturity, he wrote Bhagavatam, because otherwise he did Mahabharata before, which shows how to engage in all the pious activities. Right? And naturally from the pious activities, then if you have good association, then you'll take up devotional service. But as Narad Muni points out, just being pious, then people don't see the need, right? Because life is good, right? Materially it's going nicely, like that. So you have to be not conditioned by goodness also. Right? Being conditioned by goodness is better than being conditioned by passion and ignorance. But by being conditioned by the modes is going to get in the way of devotional service.
What would you present to a person who feels that he is successful, his life is going well, and he feels that life is good? How could we approach to preach to him?
And then like this. You can see the sticker. Life is great, and then you die.
Okay,
you know, saying the point is okay, it's going great, but how long does he want it to go great for?
Forever.
So that's the problem. That's what we're addressing, how that things can be great forever. So now, how did it become great?
Previous activity.
Okay, that's what we know. But if you're asking him, how did he become great?
He worked hard.
Yeah. Did he do the right thing or the wrong thing?
The right thing, right?
So in other words, there's laws. So therefore, we're following God's laws here, and life's great. So, but it's temporary. Imagine if we follow God's laws and acknowledge him. We work on the platform of the soul rather than the conditioning. Then it will be eternal. You know, and why work with this? We work with which in the transcendental realm. You know, so while you're here, things will go nice, and when you go there, it'll be even better. So it's not that this is all nonsense, this is all Maya. You know, that's what we do for, you know, off the street. You know. But you can just present it. It's like that. It's gentle. It's direct, and they'll understand it because they know it's there. They know that there's more. Point is, he's successful. It's going great. But there's moments when he's alone. And he'll be contemplating, and there'll be anxieties and all that. But when he's with friends and that, he's doing better than any of them, so he's great. You know what I'm saying? But the intelligent man knows it's not 100% great. It may be predominantly great, and they know that before it wasn't great, and now it is. So in the same way, it's what's great now could again not become great. But, you know, we hope it won't. You know what I'm saying? So you don't present it, yeah, but whatever's there now, it'll go away. You know, they don't want to hear this. You know, it's about, yeah, it's great, but everything is, it's temporary. Anything can be lost at any time. So how to maintain this greatness? That's by introducing the spiritual element. Then it'll be as good as it gets here, and then the spiritual will develop. Because that's eternal. Yeah. So that's the thing, is because it's great means then there's generally, how you say, more piety. So if it's presented properly, you know, a gentle way, that can catch it. You know, it's just like the common person doesn't want to be told that everything he's doing is nonsense. Whatever they're doing, they don't want to be told it's nonsense. You know what I'm saying? How to engage it in the Lord's service. So the real nonsense is not engaging it, not that they have it. Not that they have wealth, not that they're enjoying themselves. The problem is they're not doing that connected to the Lord. That's the real problem. Okay. To return to the initial question, what do we hope to gain? What can the arta of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hopefully by now... It means, what do we hope to gain? What can be the arta of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? Hopefully, by now, we see more clearly that the answer is, you get Krishna himself. And that is the Bhagavatam's own verdict, that this is the reason Krishna descended amongst us in the book Incarnation. Actually, it is Krishna only who gives himself to fortunate souls in his form of Bhagavat Shabda. So, quite clearly, real artha is pure conviction, the topmost idealistic assessment, that Lord Krishna is the supreme goal of life. That's why we want to be careful of getting distracted by these other upadis. You know, nice upadis, you know, welfare work upadis. The point is the real welfare is connecting people to Krishna. You know, and since they have to eat, why not get some food also? You know, In 7th canto, Sri Prahlad Maharaj famously warns those who miss out on Svarta Gatim Hi Vishnum. You will never be able to grasp the actual value of human existence, even if it is revealed to you by a guru, right? Because of their attachment, right? They don't want to give that up. Then one can't. But if one is fortunate, then one is able to take advantage. So you could say the fortunate soul are those that can take advantage of the presentation of the Vaishnavas. Right? Because those who are not fortunate, even they come in contact, they don't see the importance. Right? You know, it's just like take an apple. You know, nice, fresh, crisp apple. Wash it off nicely, everything. Then, you know, walk over to a dog, stick it out. They'll either look at it, walk away, come up and sniff it, or walk away. But in any case, they will walk away. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that coming in contact with the bona fide guru, that's special. But being able to take advantage of that, now that's fortunate. That's the fortunate side. So, what do you go? Finally, we get to move up at the notch.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.